the last and in between. That's everything.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 58 of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. I was about to say celebrating the episode this week, Devoid. I don't know if celebrating is the right term, but we're here and we're going to deal with it, I guess. So, Devoid, episode 22 of season 3, so the 10th episode of this arc with two more to go. Karen and I, hello Karen.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's less than 4 weeks till I come to America.
Oh my God. I'm so excited.
Well, we're here and we have our special guest this week is Jack Faruja, who's one of our Hyperball podcast hosts, is on Glee Chat with me and he was on Poker Chat, I believe. Is it just those two, Jack, or have you done any other shows?
No, yeah, it's just those two.
Cool.
Yeah.
Jack is our other Australian contingent on Glee Chat now. He's in Perth, which is the other side of Australia, so we are in a time difference and all of that, very, very far away, but still technically the same southern land. How are you today, Jack?
Doing really well, thanks. Doing
cool. Good. Jack is up very, very early because the time difference is, again, like a west to east coast 3-hour gap, and it's morning for me, and it's super early morning for him, so big thank you to Jack. Apparently he's used to this for podcasting.
Once I recorded Glee Chat at like 4 a.m. I think it was.
Oh wow.
Oh my God.
Chat. Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane. But Jack is a genius, just so everyone knows. I have never met him. I don't know if he's going to be like this with every single show he watches, with Glee at least. He's an encyclopedia. Like, you can name a moment and he can tell you what episode it's from, what the episode's called. He just has perfect recollection, and I'm just curious to see whether that's something that crosses over to literally everything he watches or if it's just Glee. But either way, I'm sure he will be great on this episode for Teen Wolf, seeing as we've all just watched it.
Don't expect it as much from Teen Wolf, I'll admit that. I'm just crazy stupid with Glee.
I've never seen anything like it. And John and Mitch are like, did he just look that up? And I'm like, no, he just knows. Like, he just knows. And it's incredible. But yeah, we will get into this, and then later today, I guess, the 100th episode of Glee is going to come out, which is not relevant to this show, but I think we know is going to be quite emotional, so we have to prepare ourselves for that later today, I guess.
Yes.
Have fun with that.
Yeah, they're pretty much ending the Glee Club. Like, that's their plot. That's their ending plot. They are, the 100 is, it's not like, ooh, it's ending, it's getting saved. It is literally ending, and then
like Sue wins and they end, like,
and that's the end of like the McKinley, you know, New Directions Glee Club, and then it's gonna move on to New York, and I'm like, that's really depressing, even though the plotline there has been kind of terrible since the originals left, but still, whatever. That's for Glee Chat, which you can probably hear later this week. As far as Teen Wolf goes, Devoid, we'll get straight into our favorite quotes of the week. And this was a very sort of interesting and intense episode, but Karen, do you want to start off?
Sure. Mine's a pretty simple one. It's when Style says chaos has come again. And I really liked it because it was super creepy and kind of poetic. That's a line right out of Othello by Shakespeare. And I wanted to read the actual, like, little part that's from, because I have no idea if this is significant, so I just want to see what you guys think. But
okay.
It's when Othello says, excellent wretch, perdition catch my soul, but I do love thee, and when I love thee not, chaos is come again.
So he's talking to Desdemona, or about her.
I assume, yeah.
And he's basically saying, it's all crazy either way, but when he actually gives into their relationship, it's slightly less crazy than when he is trying to be without her.
I guess so. And I think it's important to note, too, that Iago is here. And didn't they say Peter is basically the Iago?
Well, is that like when you said he falls into the relationship, he falls into the relationship and then he gives in? Like, is that similar to like how when he was trying to fight the Nagitse, and then he just let the Nagitsune win him over with the whole Malia Tate thing. That could be similar, I guess.
I don't know. I don't know whether that's just meant to be a single pull quote or whether it is significant to the bigger picture, but I wouldn't be surprised either way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's Act 3, Scene 3 for anybody that wants to look into it more. I don't really know anything about Othello, so I probably won't. But if anyone wants to do the work for us, go right ahead.
And then Jack, do you want to go ahead?
Yes, my quote was from Peter Hale. It was when he and Derek were talking about, Derek was trying to figure out the different plays that Styles slash the Nagitsune was trying to do. And Peter says, "It's not so easy to do when it's a game without rules." And the reason why I love this one is because it is quite a simple quote and quite a simple thing to say. Except I feel like it really does describe what the Nagitsune is really trying to do and the whole sort of aspect of the show right now. Like, they're trying to play this game by somebody who doesn't care what they're doing, and it's just doing what it wants. And I feel like that it's you know, like, we're trying to figure out what the game is, except the show just throws us in different directions that we don't know what to expect now. So I really like that quote.
Mine was also Peter, but slightly stupider, which was basically when they were trying to figure out what to do with Styles once they were over at the McCall house. And he says, "Scott is going to try and dig through Palin's sickly evil Styles' mind to unearth Palin's sickly real Styles." And I don't know why, but I just died. I don't know why. On paper, it's not even that funny, but I do not know why. I think I've just missed Peter being, like, slightly more benevolent than he has been recently. And again, this is something I had a lot of conflict in with this episode, and I've got a feeling that some of it just comes from Ian Bowen's face. Because, okay, this is going to come up in the plot of the show, but obviously we've had, you know, this big kind of back and forth about whether Peter is flat out a villain. It seems like Ian Bowen has been told by the production team to accept that his character is actually a bad guy, never, like, a redemption story, like, bad motivation, etc. But then when Ian Bowen is acting concerned about someone, he looks really concerned about them.
Yes.
Guys. I'm like, he had the same look on his face about Lydia that he did about, like, Cora at the hospital. And we don't know if, like, he just wanted Cora to live so she could find him the Talia clause or whatever. Or if, you know, he just wanted Lydia to get out of this because he needs her information. But his face and his voice sounds so genuinely panicked. And it might be, like, coming from a selfish place, but he sounds so concerned. And for me, I've always taken that of, oh, you have real feelings inside. But I don't understand if that's meant to be true or not.
I don't either. I really missed him.
Like,
yes, exactly. I do. And I really loved him in this episode, too. And then I'm like, wait a second. Are we supposed to? Like, yeah. Is he just kind of manipulating everybody again? And I think that he is, which really sucks. But I just, like, when they answered the door, or when they opened the door and he was right there and he did that little grin that he does, like, it's me, Peter Hale. I started laughing.
Yeah, and I love him.
I miss that part of him so much.
I know. Well, and
I was going to say, what actually happened, like, end of 3A, he kills Jennifer and he screams, "I'm always the alpha."
I've always been, like, he thinks he's still meant to be the alpha.
Yeah, like, I thought that was going to be an important 3B plotline, except unless he was just being nice and was killing the bad guy again, but I don't think that's it.
No, it seemed like it was going to be him trying to figure out a sneaky way to get power, but he hasn't really been attempting that unless it's, like, a long game.
Yeah.
You know, he's been more concerned about this baby thing, which is also really weird, but and I have all sorts of crack theories about this episode, let me tell you, because, I don't know, that, and it's getting to the point with Peter that there's a lot of negativity for him in fandom. Like, it's getting to the point where, like, if you like Peter, like, people are kind of hating on each other for liking Peter, if you know what I mean. They are like, no, he's unforgivable. If you just say, like, oh, he's so funny and sassy, you know, you're a dick because he's actually really evil, and there's kind of lots of treating him like he's the new kind of, or old Gerard. Like, you know how before we've been like, yeah, we like all characters, but if you actually like Gerard, you're kind of messed up. There's a lot of that going on with Peter now that it's heading more towards the fact that he may be actually irredeemable. And I'm not kind of into that. I don't want him to be irredeemable, and I don't understand what we're meant to think at this point, basically. But that line of that line that I picked, I don't know, just made me laugh and miss him being the kind of annoyed fly buzzing around in the background, like, who was mainly harmless. But, you know, and I think he's great in that role, and I think Ian Bowen was really happy in that role, so I don't know what they're trying to do here, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But let's get right into the episode, because it was kind of confusing for me, and so I have a lot of questions. But basically, it starts out with Stiles in Derek's loft, and everybody sort of comes to try to figure out what's going on with him and take him down, but obviously not hurt him. And Stiles is a lot stronger than everybody thinks, and he sort of takes everybody out one by one until the Oni show up. And then the group must protect Stiles instead of trying to fight him. And Stiles is captured by the Oni and taken to Eichenhaus. Now, was he actually taken to Eichenhaus, or did he go there voluntarily? Because I thought it was kind of strange that, like, Mrs. Yukimura showed up there and he was there, and I didn't know, like, if he knew she was going to be there or if she knew he was going to be there, and that's why they were both there at the same time. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, I didn't really follow that. I kind of more thought that it was when they get to Eichenhaus, he says that Mrs. Yukimura, Noshiko, called off the Oni, and we don't know whether he got drawn with them or whether, because he's a Nogitsune and they are part of a Kitsune, that they both have the same vanishing power, and that they both vanished at the same time, you know, independently of each other. But you'd think we would have seen him do that before now, but I don't know, because she seemed a little bit taken aback, and it's not like she had any weapons to actually kill him with or anything at Eichenhaus. So I don't know if it was intentional.
Yeah, I just got the impression that he went there by himself, because we've seen him defeat the Oni before, and I think he could do it again, definitely. So I think he went there knowing that she was going to be there.
Yeah, and maybe it was that she called them Oni off rather than have them get killed by Stiles, because they're going to, you know, if they are her tail spirits, they're going to, if they all get killed, then she might die or whatever.
I think that's what we're meant to believe, isn't it? That if she loses all of her tails, she's going to die?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. And they end up talking about Reese and the kanji that he uses to signify self. And he kept drawing it over and over again. This is the bandaged man that we're talking about. And Stiles asks her why he kept using that. And she says it's to signify that he died as himself, which makes sense. We know that that the spirit escaped him and then he died. But does that mean that the bandaged man up until this point has been Reese and not the Nagitsune? Like, this part, and even later on, just really confuses me.
I don't know. I mean, that's not exactly the impression that I got, but I also got the impression that the whole thing that you mentioned, like the kanji, wasn't Reese. Like, that he was asking Noshiko, like, someone had to put him in that wall, and that marker on the wall, I think, was drawn by whoever put him in the wall, like, in wet cement as a gravestone, if you know what I mean. And I think it was her. I think she put the symbol there for him.
Oh.
If that makes sense.
That does make a lot more sense.
That was my impression of, at least, because someone had to brick him up inside the wall. Someone had to give him that grave, and I don't know why they chose to put him there, especially sitting upright in a chair. And, you know, she left the sword with him. She left the photo with him. I think she put him there, and maybe her and her werewolf lady friend gave him that grave, drew that symbol in there, because they didn't want to say, you know, Corporal Reese, whatever his name is, died 15th of August, you know, 1943. But they just put that symbol there where no one could find him, and, you know, that was meant to signify that he had that honor or whatever of dying as himself. But as far as the bandage man goes, I don't know, and it's really weird, you know, whether it's meant to be, whether when we see the bandage man, it's meant to be, he's meant to be in the same position as Styles was, like someone who was trapped, if you know what I mean.
Well, does the Nagitsune, I'm guessing the Nagitsune, without having a physical form, I guess you could say, is meant to look like a fox, because if not, it reminds me a lot of a boggart, where it's different to each person, it hasn't got a specific, like, representation.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really... Yeah, that's kind of what Peter implies later, that, like, a fox spirit can choose to become human. But they keep saying become human, like it formed itself, and it didn't. It possessed a body, as opposed to, say, Noshiko, who is a person, you know, who... And Kira, who is a person. Kira was born as she is. She didn't... You know, Noshiko may have decided to possess a young girl and just take her over for the rest of her 900 years or whatever, but Kira at least was born into a body that is a kitsune. So I don't really understand the difference, again, between becoming a human and just being a human kitsune. This is something that's very unclear to me, and I don't really know what's going on.
It's very similar to getting bitten by a werewolf and then being born as a werewolf. We still don't know too much about that.
Yeah, like, is it like the end result the same exactly or what? Because I don't understand.
Yeah. Like, are you born as a kitsune or does a kitsune spirit possess you? I don't know.
Or is it like Noshiko had a baby and because she's a kitsune, like the baby is like human and automatically they're like, hey, some kitsune spirit want to come possess my child? Like, so it could be a kitsune spirit. I don't know.
Yeah. Was Kira a kitsune before the Nebuton got reborn, and then they came back to Bergen Hills? Like, I don't know.
Well, she didn't exhibit any powers, but we don't know. She started being one. Talking about Reese, this is something that we actually forgot to kind of touch on in his episode. The way that Noshiko said his name in this reminded me more of it. I'm very confused because some of MTV's official press keeps spelling his name Reese, like a first name, the Welsh spelling of R-H-Y-S. And then some people pronounce it, and when Arden Cho tweeted a picture of it, she was spelling it R-E-Y-E-S, and that's more like how Noshiko said it in this episode, like Rees, which is the same spelling as Erica's last name, and if he was in the army, he would pretty much be known by his last name to everyone. And so people have been like, is there some sort of weird Erica connection there? Or did they done goof and give him the same name accidentally? What do you think his name is meant to be, Karen, at this moment?
It could be Reese Reyes. I don't know, because that's like a Spanish last name.
Reyes, like R-E-Y-E-S.
See, that like that's like Reyes to me.
That's how Erica's last name was spelt though. Erica Reyes, and it was R-E-Y-E-S.
Oh, is that how it's pronounced? Because that's never how I pronounced it in my head. I don't know.
They've said it. Yeah, they've said it a bunch of times. And Erica Rees. And that's how
that's
they've seen him spelled it a few times. And it's anyway, we don't know. But I doubt that's actually going to be a plot that comes up. But it would be interesting if it did.
Maybe it's easier because you know how sometimes Jeff will say like, oh, we can't give them last names for legal reasons. Like maybe they just decided to duplicate it because that legally it would be easier.
Well, I don't know. We shall see if that becomes a thing. It's certainly something people have talked about and I don't know how it would end up having been important to Erica seeing as she's quite dead. But, you know.
Yeah. But going back to kind of what we were talking about before and how we're not sure if there's a difference between like being born a kitsune or being possessed, that sort of thing. Something else that Mrs. Yukimura also says is she's talking about Reese and she says he wasn't a monster, not like you. Well, what does that mean exactly? Does that mean that whatever's inside of Styles is different? I mean, she clearly calls him a Nagitsune. So, are there different types of Nagitsunes?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think she was talking about Reese as himself versus Styles as a Nagitsune.
But that's almost, like, not fair because, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, like, Styles as himself is obviously not a monster.
Or it could be that the Nagitsune only has the power and capacity of the mental capacity of the person that they're in. And because Reese was not only a better and simpler person, but also out of his mind, mad with pain being burnt down to a crisp, maybe his instincts as a Nagitsune were more base, if you know what I mean. They weren't as calculating and, you know, it was destructive, but it was like, oh my god, I'm running around in pain, knocking people over, dead. But, you know, you know what I mean? Like, it was less...
calculated?
Yeah, and because Styles has an immense capacity for manipulation and all of that kind of thing, that basically the Nagitsune's capacity in Styles is a lot wider than it is in Reese.
Isn't it going to suck, though, if she thinks that he's the Nagitsune? Oh, no, that wouldn't make sense. No, I was going to say, wouldn't it suck if she thinks he's the Nagitsune that was born from Reese and all that, except that Nagitsune is in somebody else, like in Beacon Hills at the moment, and this is a different Nagitsune inside Styles, but then I realise that doesn't make no sense at all because of the bandaged man. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, people do think that there might be another one at play, like kind
cough,
of being...
Allison, cough.
Oh, I don't... Yeah, yeah, it's so weird. The Allison thing is... I'm going to feel so bad at the end of the season if she's totally normal. Because, oh my god, it seems so weird, and I don't know, I can't deal with it. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what she meant in comparison to Reese, or if she thinks that, like, Styles is a worse person than Reese, which, at the end of the day, in black and white terms, on paper, probably true, actually, but, you know, what can you do at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah, Styles, I don't know, I didn't really know why she was trying to compare to Reese in terms of, like, his real dead self, but I don't know.
Well, just... probably have to wait and see what, you know, is going to happen in the next two episodes. Maybe what the twist is will kind of explain it. I have a feeling we're all going to be going back and just watching this whole half of the season again going, oh, that's what that meant, once we finally get to the final episode. But, you know, Styles takes the knife that she has with her and stabs himself and flies escape out of the wound. And I've seen a lot of people talking about the gross factor for this episode. There was a lot of flies going into wounds and stuff like that. What did you guys think? Did that bother you?
It wasn't great. The worst was it going under Derek's cut skin. That was not pleasant.
Yeah.
Even though it looked super fake and dumb, but it wasn't great.
See, I can handle, like, in last episode, you know, people's heads getting ripped off and limbs flying everywhere, but I can't handle seeing things go into people's bodies. I don't know what it is. Like, I hate seeing needles. I hate seeing flies go into wounds.
When we talked about phobias, I actually left something out that I've sort of just remembered because I think I oppress it too much when we did this in another episode. One of my biggest... It depends, because I don't know what it is to experience a phobia like what Karen has for birds or whatever, because it's not like a panicked fear, but I have a sickly disgust and horrification, like if I found out they were in my body, I probably couldn't live with myself, for any kind of parasites, like for maggots, for worms, you know, internal worms, like any, I mean, I don't think anyone really likes them, but they really mess with me. So I didn't like the idea of flies laying maggots in Derek's wound, certainly.
Did you guys ever read the books Animorphs?
Yeah,
like the yikes, yeah.
Yeah, the yikes. Yeah, none of that. None of that. And, yeah, I'm really not into parasites, so I did not like that at all. But, yeah, it wasn't the grossest thing I have ever seen, but it wasn't very pleasant.
No. Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat. It was gross seeing it go into wounds, but really, on, you know, the overall scale, it really wasn't too bad. But in the next scene, we get something that I did like quite a bit, and this was Kira going over to Scott's house. Basically, Scott lets her stay, and it's because she doesn't trust her parents. She doesn't want to go home, and I actually really liked this. I don't know how much we've seen this happen before in the past, like on other television shows where... obviously, like, the parents know the big secret and the child finds out and they kind of just explain it away. Well, like, I did this to protect you, and everyone kind of
you
gets
have to
over
deal
it.
With it, kind of.
Yeah, I like the fact that Kira was like, "Look, I can't even look at my mom in the eyes right now. She's 900 freaking years old. How am I supposed to process this?" And so maybe not the best thing to like kind of push it off, but I can totally understand why she's doing that, and I like that they went down that road with her.
And this is just the first day, right? This is the continuation of their conversation in the school.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I don't blame Kira for acting that way as well, because, to be honest, the way her mum was describing everything to her was kind of... I don't want to say she's a bad parent by any means, but it was kind of rude. Like, when her mum said... you know, she kind of yells at her and says, "Don't you understand how clear it is now?" Like, almost like she was expecting Kira to know straight away after she was...
When she was like, "Isn't it obvious?" The entire fandom was like, "No, no, it's not obvious to anyone at all." What? Like,
that's what I mean. She expects her to know, and I'm like, "Why do you expect your child to know all this?" Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't blame Kira for being very skeptical and very untrusting of her parents now.
And I think her mother is very angry at herself. I think a big part of Noshiko being very angry at herself. But yeah, it was. Not the best.
Well, what did you guys think about the Scott and Kira kiss? Because I, for one, really loved it. I love what they're doing with the relationship between those two, because Allison and Scott were, like, right from the start, hot and heavy, and it went really fast. And this, they just kissed, and she rolled over, and the two of them fell asleep, and it was just really nice to see them slow things down, especially considering everything that's going on. I think it would have been weird to put, like, a sex scene or something really romantic right in the middle of everything.
Yeah. Was this...
I was going to say, I think the Kira's the type of girl that Scott needs. Somebody that will just is sort of a bit more calmer and cooler than Allison, whereas Allison, you know, uses her, like, sexual bowling energy to anchor Scott down, whereas Kira is just, you know, very relaxed, and she keeps Scott calm, which is what he needs right now when he's being an alpha.
Yeah, I mean, is this actually the first kiss that they've actually had? Because I think they've had a few close calls, but I kept being like, is this actually the first time? Because I feel like there was that one time when she was, like, stroking his wolf face and then at the rave and all of that kind of stuff. Like, I feel like there's been all these times where they kissed that I didn't remember, but apparently this is the first time. And, yeah, I mean, it was very sort of demure and almost, like, comforting. Like, she asked him to come be in the bed with her, not out of, like, so we can have sex, but just sort of out of, like...
Comfort
and to express that she does sort of feel that way about him. But I don't know, I liked it. It was cute. I don't know if it means there'll be more. Like, it could have also been like, oh yeah, we tried that and that kind of wasn't a thing. But I think that it was just nice and very true to who Kira seems to be, as opposed to Allison being like femme fatale, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And speaking of Allison, she removed the firing pin from Chris's gun. Do we think this is shady?
Well, I got... Yes, kind of. I got really confused with this entire situation, because my big question for the whole first scene was in the last episode when that gang, like that, you know, Team Angel, was having their little conference about... how to go after Styles, and they were like, he just wants a trick. You know, we have to come up with a new punchline. I thought they were going to go in there and do something that, you know, stage something that was manipulative to him, if you know what I mean. Like, what was the new punchline that they've apparently come up with? And they basically, when Chris has his gun on Styles, and then the Oni come and he goes to shoot at them and it doesn't work, and he kind of looks at it and sort of shakes it and then pulls out a different one. For a minute, I thought that his own gun, like, that his gun had been unloaded by him, that the entire situation with Styles and Sheriff was a setup, if you know what I mean, like, that they thought that they were, you know, tricking him in some way, that it was a setup, and then Chris was like, oh yeah, this is the unloaded gun we were using for the trick, I need to pull out my real gun. But then later you have Allison being like, Allison asking, what have you really shot Styles? And he says, I don't know. She says, I took the pin out of the gun, so, you know, just in case you thought you could shoot Styles. And she, he was like, good on you. That's why the women are the leaders in the family. And like, okay, no, it wasn't Chris. It was Allison. And that's the question. Is that a genuine move of Allison's in terms of, oh, she wanted to protect Styles? Or is it evil Allison wanting to protect her evil cohort?
I mean, I don't even know if I would have picked up on a lot of this stuff without listening to you girls on the podcast. I think you put me in a completely different mindset on what not to think about Allison. I have no idea.
It's really hard because most of the time, I mean, all of the time, really, she's so genuine and you want to believe her. I mean, we've known Allison for so long, but then you look at sort of the overall scheme and we're all expecting to be tricked. And so we kind of pick everything apart. And I think that those little things that keep adding up pointing to Allison are just so hard to ignore.
Yeah, I mean,
do you think that maybe like Kate, when she was hallucinating about Kate, maybe Kate sort of like not possessed her because she is dead and that was all Nemeton doing it all, but Kate could still be having some sort of influence on her and making her crazy, maybe.
I don't know.
That would be interesting.
And where is Gerard? Like, sorry, but where the hell is he? Like, hopefully is he just dead. Still in his nursing home? Like, because ew. Like, I don't understand what's going on there or why that's just been dropped. Like, everyone, I think one of the sort of points for this episode, one of the synopses was that someone returns. You know, it seems to have been implied that it was Peter. What it said something about someone returning or helping or something that was meant to be someone who'd been gone for a long time. And apparently this is meant to be Peter, and I don't feel like he's been gone for a long time. I feel like he's been there in the background, like, as opposed to someone like Gerard or Deucalion, who were suspected, people were suspecting would come around for some reason.
Yeah, those are definitely the two that I thought, like, one of them was going to come back. And honestly, that scene that I was talking about where they open the door and Peter is there, like,
You wanted it to be Deucalion?
Yes, I thought it was going to be him. Like, I was so sure. And then it was Peter, and I was like, okay, well, that's still fine. But
yeah, but Peter is a character in the show. He's not, like, a long-lost character, you know? Like, he's there. I don't know.
Especially since we saw him not that long ago because of the whole thing with, like, Lydia and Allison and him and the memory that Talia took.
Yeah, I mean, that was it might have been a few episodes, but it was, again, he's not, like, he's not one of the main five cast members. He's one of the Beacon Hills cast members that's there every few episodes. Like, it's.
Do you think the long lost character is real Styles?
Ooh, maybe. Ooh.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, I don't know. This is horrible.
Yeah. Well,
and
okay.
What was like the big? Like, I remember reading something on one of the Hyperbole posts where it said that the show was never going to be the same after this episode. And I don't feel that way after the end of this episode.
Yeah, I've seen people being like, oh my God, this was so big. This is such, and I it's not that I didn't like the episode. I really did. And I think that Christian Taylor, who directed it, I think he has to stay a main player with Teen Wolf. He directed this one, Jeff wrote it, and the combo worked very well, it seems. I think his last episode, Riddled, he wrote, and that was one of the best ones of this season. And then he directed this one, and Jeff wrote it, and that was one of the best ones of this season. So Christian Taylor's gotta stay. He's gotta stay a bigger part of this, I think. Yeah, but regardless of it being very good, I didn't feel it was like some sort of. Look, I even saw Brooke, who's, you know, one of our team. I didn't read through our little group chat because I hadn't seen the episode yet. You know, I watched it later than the other girls in America. But I sort of, as I was going past, she was like, I don't think that they jumped the shark. But if people have been talking about them having potentially jumped the shark with this episode, I don't really get that. Like, I don't really get. It's not that it wasn't good, but I don't get why it was that big a deal compared to, like what, or if it was that big a twist or plot line or anything. It's not like, oh my God, they suddenly threw something in that's super crazy unexpected.
The only thing that I can think of is the fact that Lydia and Scott have now been inside of Styles' head. And I wonder if that's going to create more of a connection between the three of them and maybe, like, I mean, at this point, I don't think we can really speculate what that means exactly, but perhaps that's a way for them to go in a different direction or have their relationship between the three of them solidify more. Maybe they're, like, able to communicate telepathically or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, like, if Allison is the one that is not expected to die, but a lot of people think she would die at the end of this season. Maybe, like, if Lydia Scott and Styles, is their relationship is bigger, maybe it would not be a ride that Allison dies, but there's another lead girl in the group. I don't know.
Yeah, potentially. And, I mean, I guess that's a good point about the going into Styles' head as, like, a total weird thing, but maybe it just says something about what I expect from this show, but I did not find that weird.
Me either.
I wasn't like, oh my god, this is like, it's not like, I'm trying to think of, it's not like, you know, episodes in, say, Buffy, like, Normal Again, or, you know, that one where she goes back and sees the first Slayer. It didn't, or the one with the man with the cheese, it didn't feel like, to me, like a crazy, like, oh my god, my head's spinning, this is so not a usual episode of this show. Like, it felt totally acceptable and normal within what I would believe from this world that we're in, if you know what I mean. Seeing as we know that they can do the claw thing. The only thing that, again, that mildly surprised me, that I wasn't really thinking about werewolves being able to do that in people who aren't werewolves, if you know what I mean. I thought that was a werewolf-to-werewolf experience, and maybe that someone who wasn't a werewolf wouldn't necessarily survive it because it needed the healing and stuff like that, like the claw neck stabbing, I mean. So if Lydia can survive the claw neck stabbing, again, I don't know if it's because she's vaguely supernatural or if it's because that's something you can actually do to anyone. And if you can actually do that to anyone, then that does present a bit of a creepy interrogation technique, I guess, for future, but, you know.
Now, Peter was a pretty big part of this episode in a lot of different ways. And one of the ways was his discussion with Derek about the chessboard. And we basically don't get a whole lot out of this scene, but we do learn that Peter at least believes that the Negitsune is playing with no rules. And I think we kind of knew that for a while. Like, he's out just to cause chaos. I don't think he really necessarily has an end game. He's just trying to, like, destroy as much as he can while he's still here. But the main thing that I wanted to talk about was what happened on Wolf Watch, because Ian Bowen and Tyler Hoechlin were on this week's episode of Wolf Watch, and Ian basically says that Peter is a genius. Like, he has an IQ of like 190. He's super smart. He manipulates everybody. And I feel like this scene for Peter and his characterization was significant somehow.
Yeah, I felt like there was something I was missing there with Peter, honestly. Like that he was giving some hint that we should know. I don't know what it was, but yeah, I mean, I was a bit caught up in Derek being super caught up in the chess thing. Like, he was like,
yeah,
why am I Styles' king? Why? I need to know. And Derek, again, with the chess, I mean, Peter even says it. He says chess is Styles' game, it's not the Negitsune's. Where, you know, he seems to realize that whatever was going on with the chessboard was Styles himself, whether that was, you know, the original chessboard with his dad pre-Negitsune, or whether it was Styles sending a message from within the Negitsune. But I don't know, I wanted to know why Derek was so hung up on the chessboard. Like, I don't know if it was just that he thought it was a piece of the puzzle that he, you know, but he didn't realize the whole story. But I'd like to know how Peter knows, and it felt like what he was saying about the chess was some sort of clue, but I don't know what, obviously.
And the last part of this, before we get into basically where everything goes super crazy, is that Lydia hears GPS instructions that aren't there, so that's always creepy, and they find Styles' wounded body. Now, I don't know if it necessarily matters, because we don't know a whole lot about how her powers work yet, but a lot of the times, Lydia is directed toward dead bodies. She's found a bunch of dead bodies and kind of like helped other people find the dead bodies. But Styles, as far as we know, is not dead, unless you think my genius theory about him being dead since his Jeep crashed into the tree is true. but do you, like, did you guys find that strange at all? That she found him using her supernatural abilities, but he's obviously not dead.
I think that they sort of have implied that it's, she gets the feeling when someone is going to die or whatever, and that Styles was in, you know, a serious amount of trouble. I had to watch that entire thing twice, as in, like, the first time I didn't get the whole thing with the GPS, if you know what I mean. The first time I watched it, I don't know how much attention I was paying, but I was, when he was like, the GPS hadn't been working, I forgot that she'd been paying attention to GPS instructions, if you know what I mean. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, so she thinks she's hearing GPS, but it is actually the voices. And that's interesting to me that, like, that they would take, that they would just sort of appear to her in different ways, as opposed to it always sounds like a certain thing, you know, but sometimes it might just be like, you know, like a billboard changing its words to say,
right,
dead body, yeah, this way, yeah, or something. Like, well, you know. That,
that's what I like about this show, though, how it takes such, like olden mythology and really incorporates it into a new modern setting.
Yeah, and it's just, it would, I mean, it's got to be annoying for her, I guess, to have, be like, oh, don't know what's real, don't know what's a voice. It, not, yeah, just like, oh, I'm hearing someone talking, but like, oh.
Well, I mean, at least she's not trying to avoid it anymore. Like, what I was going to say earlier is how when, like, Styles wasn't dying, well, we didn't know if Styles was dying or not when he was getting the brain scans done to see if he was sick, but yeah, she was still hearing the clanging of the machine, and he, unless he, like, is dead, but we don't, we're not meant to believe that he was dead then. So I don't know what, maybe, yeah, when she does get the feeling that someone's going to die or someone is in a lot of trouble, I'm not too sure. Because we still don't know too much about it, which is why I'm excited for season four if we get a lot more Lydia, because Lydia is my favorite character and I need to know more.
Yeah. And, I mean, we had that whole situation, I guess, when she got out of the car, when they got out of the car, that Aiden was the last of the four werewolves, the four beta werewolves, to be infected with one of the Nagitsune flies. And at first I was expecting that whole fly infection thing to mean that those people were going to become, like, his minion slaves, if you know what I mean? Like, that they were going to do stuff for the Nagitsune in terms of actually, you know, being compliant. But that ended up kind of being more like, it was just basically giving them this chaotic, impulsive behavior that wasn't necessarily like, for example, Oliver in Eichenhaus, like, doing stuff for the Nagitsune. It was more, right, just, it was actually people, you know, they were, you know, Isaac and all of that, they were actually being, like, against the, you know, technical bad guys and stuff, but it was this crazy kind of, I'm going to do the craziest, most impulsive stuff to make things more chaotic in the way that the Nagitsune wants, basically. Like, so that's fun, the fly possession. I enjoyed that a lot, or not.
That reminds me, like, we don't know what happened to the flies when they flew out of Barrow's body. Do you think that maybe the, like, a few of those flies have gone around Beacon Hills and possessed other people? And now you've got me hooked on Allison again. Maybe one of those flies went into Allison.
I mean, we still don't know the deal with Barrow. Like, whether his stuff, whether his original murder was influenced by the Nagitsune, he was in Eichenhaus, whether he was, you know, being, having, or whether the stuff that he did, the second murder, was only since the Nagitsune has been out or anything like that. We do not know how long his sort of, say, timeline is compared to how long the Nagitsune spirit has been free. I was under the impression that it was, you know, he predated that, but then it seemed like that the Nagitsune spirit hadn't been active between the time Noshiko buried it and the Nemeton unearthed it.
And they keep mentioning him as well. It's not like we're meant to forget about him. They keep talking about him, so I don't know.
I really don't want him to be dead.
You're so weird.
I know. well, since we're talking
a special spin-off of all the mass murderers, like Matt and William Barrow, and who else likes a mass murderer, Karen?
Oh, that would be kind of awesome.
You're the first person I've ever met. No, that's such a lie. You're not at all, but it's... But lol, you're the... She loves...
I was just going to say, I'm really contradictory.
And Jennifer, she can come too.
Ooh, yeah.
Cool. Mass murderers show for Karen. We'll get on it.
Yay.
Yeah, okay. So, basically... yeah, like we were talking about, all the flies possess all these different people, and they're all under the influence of the Negatsune, and so we're going to kind of break it up into the different groups that are going on right now, and then we'll get into, like, the big part later on that really brings us to the end of the episode. But first up, we have Ethan and Aiden, and I thought this was interesting because they're against each other here. Basically, Ethan resents his brother for being a psychopath, which is... pretty accurate, and Aiden resents his brother for being too passive. And so what did you guys think? Like, did you actually care that they were fighting, or were you hoping that they would, like, end up killing each other?
I care about Ethan, I think. I think I believe him. I think if this is, like, if this way that they're acting with each other is the influence of... well, the fly things making them kind of unrestrained and impulsive, I have no reason not to believe what Ethan is saying, if you know what I mean. And I think that he is somewhat of a victim of circumstance in terms of having to use his power in the only way that had seemed, able to keep him alive and stuff, and killing people and Jekalian and all of that, whatever. You know, having this extra power with Aiden and being like, well, I guess that's the only way I've got to use it. But I think that he is pretty chill internally. I don't know.
Yeah. Are we meant to believe that the flies are sort of making people say and making people do what they kind of don't say that they want to say and do? Like, for example, does Ethan, like, always want to have sex with Danny but never says it sort of thing?
That was a lot of sex going on there. I think it's meant to be, like, impulsive, I think, with...
like, no filter. Like, almost like when you're drunk, like, you don't filter what you're going
to
say.
I think that we'll get to it with Derek, but I think with him it was very regressive, almost. It was like, I don't think that he goes around every day feeling like that all day, every day. He might be like, oh, I'm still bummed about this, obviously, but, you know, he's not actively making those plans every day, but, you know, some part of his subconscious might have entertained it, and,
maybe, like, the flies are taking, like, the worst or most inappropriate, like, thoughts, or maybe the flies / Negatsune are making them do stuff that...
Yeah, being like, oh, yeah, this is what, you know, that...
This is what will piss them off.
Doesn't it deserve that? Yeah. Like, doesn't it, kind of thing? I don't know, it definitely is sort of a bad influence, like, bad impulsive influence, but... Aiden and Ethan, I don't know, Aiden, I just noticed the twins didn't seem that changed compared to Isaac and Derek. I don't know if it's just because we don't know them as well, but, like, they didn't seem, like, creepily changed. They just seemed, like, a bit angrier at each other.
Yeah, I mean, they're always so aggressive anyway that when we see it in the other characters, I think it's super noticeable, but in them, it's really like, well, this, you know, we've kind of seen this before.
Yeah, that's probably bad, but yeah.
But speaking of Isaac, he does show up, and he wants to kill the twins because of Erica and Boyd. And I know everybody was really worried about entering into... the season and wondering how they were going to deal with that sort of stuff. And the thing is that a lot of people were worried they were going to kind of push it under the rug and forget about it. But I like that they keep bringing it up. And I like how Allison said, I thought we were going to give them a second chance. And they're not, you know, burying the hatchet. They are kind of keeping it at the forefront. And I think just in terms of, like, writing and storytelling and making sure that even the characters that have passed on kind of still get to shine a little bit, because a lot of people loved Erica and Boyd, that, you know, it's really great that they're still doing that.
Mm.
And I think that's a testament to the show and how great their continuity is as well. Like, right, we have never forgotten about Jackson because they always mention him and he was such a huge flyer. That's what I love about the show, how it's such great continuity.
Yeah.
Especially when his Venom keeps popping up every
I mean, well, I'm sure we'll get to the point in terms of Styles and his whole plot line in terms of what they do to him in the house. But before they bring in Peter, like at this point, while Ethan and Aiden are fighting in the school, they've taken him back to obviously the McCall's house when Lydia found him on the ground, and Deaton. Someone messaged me, I think it was Akio Nadine, she messaged me on Twitter being like, I could hear Natalie Fisher sigh all the way to Europe the minute Deaton appeared on screen in this episode. That's really accurate because he did nothing. He did nothing at all. He gave Styles Canham a venom, which I'm sorry, by this point, Scott and Melissa should have like a set of little herbs and spices to use in their house on things. If they've got the mountain ash, if they've got all of that, they don't need Deaton for that. They, you know, he just keeps it all to himself so he can appear helpful. It's like, he's not actually helping them. He provided no solution whatsoever besides the Canham of Venom and a bit of gaffer tape. Like, that is all he's good for.
After listening to the podcast last week, you guys, someone mentioned something about if Danny becomes Scott's emissary, he would do a lot better job than Deaton ever has, I think.
Yes.
If Danny actually starts to... Because I think if Danny was to learn about the supernatural world, he seems like the type of person that would want to research everything and just know everything about what everything does, and he would actually want to help.
So basically we have, Isaac comes in, tries to kill the twins, but then Allison and Kira team up and they fight them together. And I'm so in love with this. I think the two of them together is so awesome for so many different reasons. But what did you guys think of their scene?
What I really noticed, first of all, was whether they both came there separately, you know, whether Allison tracked Isaac there and Scott sent Kira there or whatever, or whether they like planned to go there together. But regardless, that they were kind of like, if this was any other show and these were the two love interests of the main character, they would be like fighting while exchanging like snarky quips about Scott, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
The thing that really, like, this isn't actually exactly the same, but the thing that reminds me of actually the episode, I think, in season 2 of Doctor Who where Rose meets Sarah Jane and they're kind of doing that, this competitive thing with each other about their sort of times traveling with the Doctor. And that in itself is a spoof of the way that you see girls who both have a history with the same guy sort of bicker over him while they're trying to work as allies. And I guess at this point we don't really know if Allison knows like everything about Scott and Kira anyway, but I think she has seen them together. You know, she saw them holding hands and they had that little nod and all of that kind of thing. So, you know, I kind of liked that it was just like, yep, yeah, cool, good, girls, yay, let's go, and not, like, making it around, you know, bickering about, you know, oh, good job hitting him with the sword, Allison. By the way, I kissed Scott, you know, kind of thing. Like, it's so nice not to have that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think just the fact that the two of them are working together and they're just totally fine with everything, but also the way that they were trading weapons and it was two girls against three werewolves. And it was just, it was awesome on so many levels. And now I want this to continue. And I'm one of the people that is not so sure Allison's going to make it out of the season alive. And I'm really worried because I really want Kira to be able to fight side by side with another girl and them to just kick ass like they were here. It was so great to see it.
Yeah, and what I liked about this episode as well is that there's a lot of characters interacting who, like, haven't really before or don't do it as much. Like, for example, Allison and Kira and then Scott and Lydia. But it wasn't, like, out of the ordinary. It was just, you know, they're all part of a pack and they're all going to work together. And
yeah,
it was great.
That's what I mean as well, like, with what we were speaking about earlier about whether this episode was that different. There were aspects of it that were totally different, but it didn't feel like, hey, look at how different this is. Look at how unusual we're being. Like, it just, I think it says something about the writing of the show and the development of the various characters that you can create new situations without them feeling like it's totally weird, if you know what I mean, like that we believe
definitely
the, you know, relationship off screen or whatever.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And I think we get a lot of that in the next part too, where Derek and Chris are together. Not that they haven't been together. I mean, obviously they spent tons of time in jail together. So it's, like you said, not out of the ordinary, but they're also not two characters that have a history of being together for longer periods of time.
Oh,
and
my
when it
God.
Is, it's sort of like, I'm going to break your window and then I'm going to do this to you. And it's a lot of back and forth. But here we got actually kind of a very personal scene, because Derek obviously goes to Chris and tries to light him on fire because of what Chris's sister, Kate Argent, did to his family. And I loved this scene because, for one, Derek went a little crazy. And I know we always talk about Dylan's acting, but Hecklin was freaking scary, and it was
awesome. I had not watched the episode yet. One of these girls, it would have been either Courtney or Brooke, I'm sure, tweets, so nice to see Derek smiling and laughing in this episode. And I was like, oh, that's not going to be good. I was like, oh. Because I don't trust them, you know, as far as to believe that it would be a happy smiling and laughing, you know. But, oh, my God, Chris freaking loves Derek. He loves Derek. When he opens the door and he's like, Derek, you're like, his face. Again, I don't know if this is just J.R. Bourne's face being really concerned at all times rather than, like, you know, that's just his default eye emotion. But, oh, my God, when he opened the door on Derek and saw Derek look slightly, like, you know, perplexed, his concern was so deep. And then later, like, when stuff continues, like, oh, my God, he's, like, nearly crying about, like, having to maybe kill Derek. And it's just, like, I can't deal with how much Chris loves Derek. It's so weird. When did this happen?
I can't either. I don't know. In jail, maybe? I'm not sure.
Look,
but I love it.
What happens in prison stays in prison.
oh, God.
Sorry. They had a couple of beers and saw where it went.
oh, my God.
He loves Derek. And I don't, you know, it's so weird. I mean, it's amazing. Like, but I'm like, is this his, like, new adopted son or something? Like, is this, I don't think Allison's going to be down with this because she apparently still doesn't like Derek very much, but Chris freaking loves Derek, and I can't get over it. It's so good. I don't know. I think Chris Archer I think he is a very soft and demure person. I think that he's been in the circumstance of having to be a hunter and all of that stuff, and, you know, he does it. But I don't think that his personality is as harsh as he was sort of blustering to be in the first couple of seasons. You know, I think that he is a big softy.
And I think as he gets to know Derek and other werewolves more, it's just going to keep going in that direction. So this is something that I would really like to see continue as well.
Yeah.
But something else that really surprised me was that Agent McCall saves Sheriff Stilinski's job.
I kind of wasn't, I mean, it was a little bit surprising. I was kind of, when he got up to say something, I was like, yeah, given all your, like, weird apologies and, like, you know, thank yous over the last couple of episodes, I think that something is, you know, I think that he's going to be like, no, I've realized that even though this has a really bad history of unsolved cases, I've seen the circumstances and I totally get why this is a weird situation. I kind of vibed that was going to happen, that they had some sort of truce going on and that they're trying to make Agent McCall slightly more sympathetic than we were for him at the beginning. And I don't know if I'm here for that, but I did kind of vibe that that was where it was going. I am very confused about what the hell this situation is that is going on between Sheriff Stilinski, McCall, Stiles, and Melissa, that they all know this thing that Scott doesn't know. And I have the crackiest theories about it because apparently I'm insane. But yeah, what are people's thoughts on so far?
Well, let's set this up first because we're not going to be able to talk about it kind of when it happens because there's a lot of other things going on. So I definitely want to talk about this now because basically previously Styles, when he confronted Agent McCall, made it sound like whatever this big secret was, it was McCall's fault. And even when McCall was dying and he felt like he needed to tell Scott, it sounded like it was going to be a confession. But then we get the Nagitsune talking about it like it's Melissa's fault or that something she did was something that Scott would be angry about. So what I am even more confused about what it could possibly be.
All right. Let me reel you off my theories. Okay. Because I am insane, apparently. Yeah, because they've definitely made it sound like it was McCall's fault, and then Nagitsune is messing with Melissa, I think. But that being said, it could be something that is potentially both of their faults, like they decided something else, or it could be that he thinks that, you know, Scott would be angry at Melissa for being, you know, for putting up with being a victim. But I don't know. Basically, my ideas were very tied into the whole Peter Malia potential child thing. Like, I just feel like that those random plot lines aren't unconnected, if you know what I mean. I was like, is it actually that Peter is Scott's father and not McCall? You know, like, that's the baby. The baby is Scott, if you know what I mean. Or is it that the child is Melissa and Peter's child and not, you know, and that was Malia? Or was it that Melissa cheated on McCall with Sheriff Stilinski and had an abortion or something like that? And then I was like, none of this makes sense. And I don't think Sheriff would, and I'm assuming this is in between the time that the sheriff's wife died and that, you know, McCall left. So I'm like, no, clearly it's not going to be Malia being Peter and Melissa's child. She's nearly the same age as Scott, and I think people would have noticed that. And Styles had to be old enough to understand what was going on, if you know what I mean. Then I was like, are they mad? You know, is it that they did something that Melissa was the victim of, and then Nagitsune is just being a bag of dicks and saying that Scott will hate her for, you know, say McCall cheated on Melissa and then Melissa put up with it, if you know what I mean, that she didn't kick him out, or he beat her and she put up with it and didn't kick him out, and that Scott would find her weak and hateful for doing that, you know. I don't know, like, but for some reason I can't get it out of my head that this baby story is connected.
See, yeah, I think that it probably could be connected, but
maybe she got rid of the baby or something. Maybe she was complicit in, like, the, you know, it wasn't their child, but, like, that they, you know, she was involved in hiding the baby or something.
But say, in my opinion, like, when we start getting into all of that, it sort of starts to get a bit too soap opera-y, which I don't think the show is too much. Mm. What I think, though, is, I mean, I don't want this to be true, but I wouldn't be surprised if McCall beat Melissa and then Melissa put up with it, or she did something that, well, if she put up with it, and then that's what the Nagitsune is talking about, like how it's her fault that she didn't tell Scott or she didn't do anything else, and instead she called Stilinski. And also, I think that maybe Styles was quite young, and then when he got older, he realized what he actually overheard or what actually happened.
I mean,
and then they're all angry, then, like, they're all sort of pissed at each other because no one's told Scott. Only thing that I don't agree with myself about is I don't think that his dad would have told Scott that on his dying bed.
Yeah, that's the thing. It has to be something vaguely forgivable. It has to be something that's like, you know, because the sheriff was also like, let me do you a favor, just tell him everything you've wanted to. And people keep seeming to put the weight on McCall, not on Melissa, like, you know, that McCall is the one who has something to say. Maybe they'll hate Melissa. Maybe Nagitsune thinks Melissa will hate Scott for hiding it, like, say he has a secret brother or something, but, you know, maybe they had a kid together and they didn't want it, and so they were like, we just want one child, we're just going to adopt out this other child that we've had together, or, I don't know, that seems completely stupid, but it does seem to be on McCall, so maybe it's just that Melissa never told Scott that they think the Nagitsune will hate you for, but he does seem to imply that, you know, Melissa called, told the sheriff a thing, and that would be something they would hate Melissa for. But I don't know. Karen, do you have a theory?
Mine actually falls in line with what you were just talking about, because I keep thinking about season four and all of the male characters that we keep seeing
the new
popping
boys.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of them are going to be kind of put into this supernatural world. And I think it's got a lot of people thinking. But my theory is that maybe, yeah, Agent McCall cheated on Melissa and got somebody else pregnant. And then Melissa tells the sheriff, doesn't tell Scott that he has a brother, a half-brother, and so, like, McCall leaves to go raise this child or something like that, and Melissa just never tells Scott. I could see Scott being upset that she wouldn't trust him with that information, or she didn't want him to know that information. So, and I think the Nagitsune, I mean, it's all about strife and chaos, so I can see the Nagitsune kind of making it seem like it's a bigger deal than it actually is. Like, I don't think that Scott would hate his mother forever for that, but I do think he would be upset. So
yeah.
Well, I don't know, that's the most logical thing I can think of.
I mean, I'm starting to agree with that a bit more now, and I think that it probably could be Malaya, and then they put it up for adoption, and then Tay got it, because the only thing that we have to justify that Malaya could be Peter's daughter is just because Lydia and Allison saw a photo. Like, there's no other evidence to prove that she actually is. So it still could go along the lines of she's, you know, Scott's, like, half-sister.
Is next season just going to be, like, Teen Wolf, The Next Generation, and it's going to be, like, Peter's child and, like, Scott's little brother and, like, all of these things? Like, is that,
I hope not.
What's gonna
yeah,
be
I hope
happening?
Not
too.
Like,
a lot of people are wondering, because a lot of freshmen are coming in, if they're sort of setting up this whole thing with, like, the next generation. And I'm just not into that. I mean, Glee tried it, and it didn't work out too well.
I was about to say that. Glee probably would have worked better if they had extended the seasons longer and finished at the high school. And I feel like that's what Teen Wolf should do. And I don't want them to continue the show just for the fact of continuing the show rather than finishing it off on a high note and leaving it at that and leaving it to be a fantastic show at that.
Yeah.
Rather than continuing it and potentially ruining what it once was.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's
brought up before, too. I mean, I think Jeff has said that specifically, that we're trying to keep them in high school for as long as possible. So I really don't think that's the case.
I mean, most of the seasons, if you look at the timelines of them, I mean, they're not perfect, but they only take place over a few weeks. Most seasons will only cover a few weeks of time, if you know what I mean, which obviously the kids are going to age at some point, but, you know, it took us sort of three seasons to get through, you know, a year or whatever. Like, they had season one, I think, started halfway through their sophomore year, and then season three was the beginning of their junior year. So, like, three seasons over 6 months, like, we're doing okay, I think.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into the big part of this episode, which is pretty much the final act of it, because this is really interesting, and I think this is where a lot of questions are popping up as well. Basically, Lydia brings in Peter to help them, and she says that she'll tell him the name of his kid if he helps them, which I think makes sense, because Peter wouldn't just help them. Like, there's always got to be something in it for him. So that's why he's there. But my main question in this part is, why didn't she want Scott to know? She specifically said Scott can't know, and I didn't understand that part.
Again, I think this is what fed my idea that, like, the mystery was that, like, Malia was in some way the love child of Peter and Melissa, and like, for some, and then this is what the big secret was. For some reason I got that into my head, which I think is probably wrong, but I don't know, it might just be that she doesn't want Scott to know that Lydia helped him in any way, or, you know, is keeping secrets about this child or whatever. Like, this is what made me think that the McCall secret story is tied into the Peter baby story. I just really think it is. I don't know why. I might be super wrong, but I really think it is.
It kind of feels like we're missing a scene. Like, the way they were talking in this episode, and, like, it feels like us as the audience are meant to know something that we don't, and that's what just the way they were having the conversation. I don't know what it was, and in last week's episode when it was just flown by mentioned that Malia had already seen Scott, but we have no idea what that interaction was like. So it feels like we're missing that scene, and the information from that scene is meant to determine what we know about this scene. It just feels like we're missing something here or there.
I've gotten that a lot lately, actually, and I don't know if it's disjointed like that on purpose because of, you know, lose your mind. Like, that's the tagline for this whole half of the season. So it kind of makes sense that maybe things are going to be jumping around. But I also think there's just so much information that they have to feed us over a course of 12 episodes, especially in the final few, where I think everything's going to come together and finally make sense. So I hope that we do really get all the answers that, you know, we've been wanting these last few months. But Peter tells them that they have to go inside Stiles' head in order to save them. And I think this was just really cool. And Natalie, you were talking before about how it was shot and everything and how, like, those two guys make a good duo. And I really loved what they ended up doing inside of Eichen House, which is where Lydia and Scott end up when they first enter Stiles' head. And just the flashback with Lydia and everything was so cool. And my question here is, what do you guys think that signifies? Are we meant to kind of take something out of that? Like, why do you think she would think about, well, see, it's not even her thinking about that because they're in Stiles' head. Why do you think in that situation specifically?
I've got many feelings about this because Lydia is my favorite character. I think that because they're in Stiles' head, this was sort of like the first night that Stiles really got, like, close to Lydia in a way that, like, he took her to the homecoming, and maybe he always sort of thinks about it. So, like, I don't know. I think it goes back to the feelings that Stiles probably still has for Lydia, and that's why that situation was there. And also to mess with Lydia, like, this was when it all going downhill for her.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that it was kind of, first of all, they both woke up in the straitjackets, right? And number one in this situation, if the inside of Stiles' head that the Nogitsune is using looks like old school Eichen House, it makes me really wonder again about that Eichen House episode and about if every single thing in it was real or if we were seeing some of that from the perspective of Stiles trapped through the Nogitsune, if you know what I mean, because I just cannot believe that we're meant to believe that those facilities were real in 2014. But I don't know. But so they wake up trapped in there, and then they both go out to try and get to Stiles, and they're both sort of waylaid by things that, I mean, in Lydia's case, sort of to confuse and upset her, or in Scott's case, to try and sink him into his weakness. And I feel like they were both kind of traps by the Nogitsune, like, both, like, he knew they were in there, and he was sort of using what was in Stiles' head to waylay them.
Right, but I think what's really interesting here, too, is the fact that Lydia sees the bandaged man, and he's drawing the kanji for self on the wall. And later, Stiles comes out of that disguise, and it's really him. And so I don't know if that's supposed to be significant or not, because on the flip side of that, you've got Scott making out with Allison in her closet. She's the only person that was in Stiles' head other than the people that are already in there, the Nogitsune, Stiles, Lydia, and Scott. And I think this just kind of points to Allison once again being sort of shady, and we're not really sure why she would be in there other than the fact that maybe she's a Nogitsune and she's also influencing Stiles and is inside his head.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I didn't think about it that way. I kind of took her as like a projection, like a, you know, like not even her, just a fantasy. But you, what you're saying that is quite truthful, and I don't know.
if there is something really wrong with Allison, we're going to have to find out in the next episode because we've only got two more episodes left.
Yeah, I feel like it's crunch time, guys.
I'm scared.
Exactly, and it's around this time, like, episodes 9 and 10 are usually the ones where we flip the switch and we figure out, like, okay, who's the alpha from season 1, or who's going to really be controlling the Kanama now? And it's those episodes where we, and, you know, of course, who the Duroc really is, that happens right around this time, and I feel like we haven't necessarily gotten that yet. I mean, yes, supposedly we have the real Styles back now, which is awesome. It's about time, but I feel like maybe it's just me waiting for the other shoe to drop with Allison, but I feel like there has to be something else that happens, and that maybe it should have happened already. And that's kind of why I was confused why they're like, oh, what's going to happen this episode is going to change the course of the whole series. Well, where is that?
Change the course of the whole series. I can't. Again, I just, why? Like, what? Mm. Like, am I missing something? Like,
that's what it feels like. It feels like there's something that we haven't seen. I don't know. Maybe it's like the repercussions of stuff that happens in this episode that will do it. We just don't realize that yet.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Styles is, like, really messed up now. Like, we haven't heard... Apparently we've got real Styles back. We haven't heard him talk. Maybe he's, like... Maybe he has, like, the effect of, like, a stroke victim, or, like, he's regressed or something, like, he can't talk or, like, something, you know, maybe
he... Didn't he say Scott's name?
Do you mean inside the head, or do you mean once he got out of the bandages?
Once he got out.
I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember.
I think he did.
I don't know. I can't really see at this point what would be that big a deal. I mean, that sounds very dismissive, but I don't see it. I don't really understand. Can I just say, when they were back in the, being strapped down on the beds in the Icon house in Styles' head, I loved Lydia being to Scott, like, basically it was like the equivalent of, like, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Are you a witch or not? There's no wood. You're a witch. Yes! Light fire. And I was like, I loved that. It made me think of that so much, but, you know,
yeah,
just I get my kicks where I can.
Good segue, because we end up going to the King's Cross station in the afterworld, or the between world. I love seeing this place, though. I think that it's stark white and it's beautiful in a way, and just really, like, ethereal and mysterious, and it always gets me really excited when we end up in that place.
Station, like, it's, yeah, it is, but yeah.
Yeah. And we see Styles playing a game of Go with the Nagitsune. And Scott howls to get Styles' attention, which, by the way, was so awesome when Lydia was like, he's a part of your pack. How do wolves signal their location? I really loved how that sort of has come full circle, and that, you know, we're reminded once again that Scott's the alpha and that his pack doesn't necessarily consist of other werewolves. That's just always good to remember. And that's when Styles destroys the game and Lydia and Scott wake up. So do you guys think that game of Go was significant in any way?
What is the aim of Go?
I don't know much about it. All I know is it's basically like a really complicated version of chess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much this whole half of the season.
I think the game was significant in some way. Like, I think that it's got to do with him sort of battling, you know, for control, potentially. And again, if anyone has seen the Doctor Who, the second of the Doctor Who episodes that Neil Gaiman wrote, Nightmare in Silver, where the Doctor is sort of semi-possessed by a Cyberman, very similar thing happens.
Oh, I love that episode.
You know the one I'm talking about? No, it's okay.
Yes, I love that one.
It's very similar circumstance in that they are playing a mind game with each other to gain control of the person, and sort of reminded me of that. But, you know, they were playing on top of the Nemeton, and my whole question is, has Styles been possessed since drowning? Like, is when was the thing, you know, when did the thing get disrupted? Is it when the Nemeton physically shook all that stuff under the ground, or is it before that? Because has Styles been in that, you know, the others came out of the white room, did Styles never come out?
Ooh,
that's a good
question.
Yeah.
And the other thing that really confuses me with this is that when Styles comes out of the floor, wrapped in the bandages, like, he is that bandaged man. So when they're in the white room, like, the bandaged man doesn't, like, he seems like the bad guy, and the guy who actually looks like Styles seems like the good guy. He's the one that destroys the game and allows everybody to wake up. But how do you, like, switch back forth between, well, the bandaged man is a bad guy, well, actually it's Styles inside, well, actually,
I mean, I think,
you know, it doesn't make sense.
I think
to me.
I think when Styles came out as the bandaged guy, he had his mouth still covered in the way that Reese did when he was first bandaged up. And I think that when the bandaged guy is the Nagitsune, it has the crazy Nagitsune teeth, if you know what I mean. And I think that they were I think the Nagitsune coming out of Styles was trying to confuse the people. I don't know why they put him in the bandaged man exactly, but I'm pretty sure when it was what we're meant to think is normal Styles, it was the bandaged man as Reese was originally, as opposed to with the Nagitsune silver teeth. But I don't remember which scenes in the episode that the Nagitsune had the silver teeth and which was just bandaged man, if you know what I mean.
I really like the idea that that whole thing was just a distraction for Void Styles to escape. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird that he would be coming out of his own fit, like, that the real Styles is brand new, if you know what I mean, that the real Styles is not the actual physical body of the original Styles, or how that even works, or whether it is the real one, and when the, you know, Nagitsune took him over, he created a sort of shadow Styles around him, or whatever, like, I don't even know, but it's weird. It's like,
especially since he sort of, like, pukes up, like, the dark, cloudy, smoky stuff too. Mm-hmm. I would have assumed that that was dispelling the Nagitsune from inside of Styles, but apparently not.
And I mean, I'm sure that's what you're meant to think, but it's super weird. It's like, is the Styles we're going to live with now for the next however long, is he like technically clone Styles, if you know what I mean? Like, he's the right Styles, but he's not the original like, the original Styles' body is ruined, and now the, you know, Void Styles is the original body. I don't really understand.
Oh, this might make sense, though, because remember somebody's supposed to get supernatural powers, but not in a normal way? Like, what if he is, like, a clone, and with that, like, he just has these superpowers now?
I don't know. I can't.
It's too much.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we get Lydia and Peter talking, and Lydia whispers Malia's name into Peter's ear, and that's when Void Styles wakes up and he starts peeking out the bandages. So obviously Malia is some sort of trigger for something, and I'm assuming, oh, you know what? I was just going to say, I'm assuming that it's for Void Styles because that's when he woke up, but that's also when the real Styles kind of escaped the other Styles, so maybe that doesn't mean Malia's shady, but I still don't trust her.
No, I hope she's not meant to be like Styles' one true love. Like, that, I'm just not interested.
Like his anchor.
No, I'm not interested in that, because she's a dick. So, yeah. Sorry, but she is, I don't like her.
I don't either.
We need to know more about her. We have to know more about her soon.
I just don't understand why her dad made that much of a big deal of, like, you know, getting her back and then put her in a mental hospital, even though she seems fine, like, literally fine, except a bit sociopathic.
Yeah, I think her and Morel are in cahoots, I think. I think they're
so
deaf
I.
or something going on. Bloody Morel.
Well, end of the episode, Void Styles escapes with Lydia, and it sets up what's going to happen in Insatiable, which is next week, and that looks really intense and interesting, but whew, that was an episode with a lot of questions and a lot of answers and a lot more questions on top of that. So it was a good episode, I think, but there was a lot of information jam-packed in there, and I think I'm still trying to process it.
Mm. Oh, my God. Okay, apparently, can I just say, the Tumblr girls and what they've seen in the fandom, they always give us a few notes in terms of what some of the popular theories are and stuff like that. And the top one on the list they've put is, like, stuff that's going around the fandom is Peter Scott's dad, and in question marks, really, guys? So clearly they are judging the hell out of people who thought that. But sorry, guys, I definitely thought that. I didn't really think it, but I'm like, is that what's meant to be going? Is that why she doesn't want to tell Scott? Like, is it that Melissa and Peter had a baby together and that was, and then, you know, McCall left? Because, yeah, I definitely got that connection. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I definitely got that. It's very confusing to me.
See, that,
it
that,
definitely
that just reminds
passed
me
through
of,
my mind, too.
That reminds me of After the Deathly Hallows Part 2 movie, how so many people thought that
Snape was Harry's dad. I'm like, this is why you can't make movies. This is why, like, yeah, you're making them for people who know the books well and are mentally filling in the gaps and who might be appreciating the scenes. Like, oh, yeah, that's so beautiful because, yeah, it's like in the fourth movie, no one who hadn't read the books really understood what the hell was going on with Rita Skeeter because they actually never said that she was, like, an animagus. Oh, and it was just like, yeah. Anyway, yeah. The Harry Potter movies are a problem. But, yeah, Peter Scott's dad definitely thought it as well. Did not see the notes down the bottom. Definitely thought it myself and was very, very confused by that. So I don't think that that's the answer. If it is, that's going to be really weird.
So wrapping up with some feedback, we have a couple of pieces of feedback from Tumblr. The first one is Wait to Procrastinate. Love that. That's a great username. And they said, okay, I had a crazy idea. The Nagitsune looks like Styles. What if they are connected somehow still because of this? And the only way to stop it is to sacrifice himself, like on the Nemeton, hence the divine move. I think this is a great suggestion because it does sort of make sense, but I'm definitely not okay with that.
It kind of reminds me of, again, Harry Potter, like, neither can live while the other survives in the prophecy, and how Harry thinks that for Voldemort to die, he'll have to die too, which is technically true. Not that Dumbledore's really helpful in that department, but, and like Snape says, what, so you've been, like, raising him like a pig for slaughter or whatever. But yeah, that's kind of what this theory says to me. Lots of Harry Potter in this episode with King's Cross Station. But yeah, like, if it's like, if the evil part and the normal part are connected and one can't die without the other dying, basically.
I feel like I don't think the show can go on without Styles. And it's almost the same way as if Styles was to die, I feel like that would be the exact same thing as him becoming a werewolf. Like, the show would just lose something altogether. Mm. And I don't think that they're going to ever kill off Styles or make him a werewolf. Like, there's no way they can.
I think with the bite as well, they've made a bit too much of a big deal of it. This, like, you know, oh, yeah, as a solution. They've talked about it being a solution too much that it's not going to be the final solution, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think Styles is going to die. Well, I kind of know that he's not because I know that he signed on for season 4, but,
yeah.
You know, he's going to be, Dylan O'Brien's going to be on the show in some capacity next season. So there's going to have to be some solution, but are we going to end up with two Styleses? Are we going to end up with this, like, random evil Styles that just hangs around? Or are there just going to be two Styleses flat out? Like, they get rid of the Nagitsune, but we're left with two Styles bodies, and they're like, so
oh my God.
Do we kill the spare? Like, I don't really understand what's going on here. But It's weird. So yeah, I don't know.
That's interesting. And speaking of Styles, the next Tumblr feedback we have is from UMNAATEF. And they said, guys, remember when Holland said that Thanks Mom was foreshadowing? Well, I think that's it. Styles is actually Melissa's son. I know it sounds crazy, but that would explain why Melissa only needed one tear to crumble. It's her son crying in front of her.
Guys, no, I'm going to stop you right there. Melissa's not white. Styles is very white. He's very, very white. Melissa
pale.
Is not white. Any child of hers with a white guy is going to be mixed race. Like, sorry.
Well, and I think that was just a testament to Melissa's mothering instinct and how much she cares for Styles as her son, but not actually... No, like her son, but not actually as her son.
I mean, I could believe it the other way, that maybe Melissa and the sheriff had an affair after, say it was in the time after Claudia died, and that they had some sort of affair, you know, hookup, whatever, weird comfort thing. Maybe she got pregnant, maybe they had another child that is, you know, they said was McCall's until it was born, and then it turned out not to be McCall's, and they got rid of it or whatever. Either she had an abortion, or so that, you know, she would be the mother of Styles's half sibling, or that it's like, you know, someone we haven't seen yet, like one of these new kids or something. But again, I don't think the blame is with Melissa. And also, I don't think Melissa could, if, given the ages of Scott and Styles, I don't think Melissa could be pregnant with Styles in the same time as Scott. If, I don't think they're more than 9 months apart, if you know what I mean. I think they're around the same age. So I do think the baby thing and the McCall family issues thing are connected. I'm so sure of it. But, like the Peter baby thing. But I don't know. It's the foreshadowing thing could be just that Sheriff and Melissa are going to get married and that one day she'll be his stepmom and they'll all be a big happy pack family. But I don't know.
Do you think that is endgame? Okay, do you think that they are going to get married?
I don't know. I don't actually think so. People really ship it, and I don't
I don't think so.
I don't not, but I actually don't see it, like, really being a part of the show. I feel like it would be too much of a... I feel like to show the development of their relationship and, like, their eventual dating or marriage or whatever would be too much... I feel like it would be too big a plot for the time... for the show to spend time on, because they don't usually spend that much time on, like, a personal plot, if you know what I mean. Like, even romances of the kids, it's not actually usually that forefront, and I feel like that that would be something that would be great in fan fiction, but that the show would never spend that much time on to the point that they would actually be like, oh, we're having a wedding and stuff like that.
Yeah. And to be honest, that's not even that. I don't really come to Teen Wolf for the romantic side of it as much anyway, so I wouldn't want them to spend as much time on that.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think that whatever they end up doing with the Sheriff and Melissa, it's going to be really slow and long term, because like you said, they don't spend a whole lot of time together right now, and it really isn't the focus. I mean, if the teenage romance isn't really a focus, then the adult romance isn't really going to be a focus, even less so. I think that it's cool and I like that idea, but if it happens, it's probably not going to happen for a long time and it's going to end up being really slow.
Mm.
But do you have a non sequitur question for us now?
I do. Okay, so this week's non sequitur has come up by a few things I've been thinking about this week. I basically want to know, who is your weird quote unquote celebrity crush? I am not talking about an actual person who, well, an actual person. I'm not talking about a person who is sort of lauded as a celebrity and who is, you know, a poster boy in some way or poster girl in some way of, like, you know, musician, actor, whatever. I'm talking about someone who's in the public eye who it's kind of weird to have a crush on. For example, I'll go first. I have two. One of them is Ronan Farrow, who is a journalist. He's Mia Farrow's son. He's allegedly Woody Allen's son, but he is actually probably not Woody Allen's real son. It's been claimed that he's Frank Sinatra's real son, Mia Farrow's ex-husband, and he looks exactly like Frank Sinatra. So I think that, and he hates Woody Allen, like he hates all that family drama that they have going on. So yeah, I think that he is probably Frank Sinatra's son. But regardless, he's a journalist and I believe he has a news show now. He's just so gorgeous and he's so funny on Twitter. Like when the allegations about his like parental stuff came out, like he literally did this tweet saying, well, we're all possibly Frank Sinatra's son. And it was just so, he's so funny and he's so cute and I love him. And the other person I have a weird crush on who is not technically like someone who would be on a list of major crushes is Scott Gill, who is not a famous person. He is John Barrowman's husband. And he is famous in terms of that he doesn't mind being in the public eye with John. But he's like an architect. He's not in a celebrity profession. He is so gorgeous. He is so long-suffering. Because can you imagine being married to John Barrowman? He's freaking insane. And he's both extremely physically attractive. He's literally my mental image of Remus Lupin. Like, if Remus Lupin was actually a person, Scott Gill is my perfect mental image for Remus Lupin. But he's so cute and long-suffering and funny. And, like, the stories that John tells about him are hilarious. And the, you know, I've got both of John's autobiographies, like his books and the way he talks about Scott. I love Scott Gill. I lead a Scott Gill appreciation life. I believe I have tagged things on Tumblr and LiveJournal with that. And I adore him. So those are my weird, like, quote-unquote celebrity crushes that are not actual celebrities. Who wants to go first?
I've got one. Have you got one, Karen?
You've gone first.
It's a really hard question.
I wish you hadn't sprung this on us, because I feel like I have so many more, but I can't really think of them.
Okay, yeah. Jack, you go first.
I was trying to think of, like, the most not most obscure, but ones that aren't, like... Like, I could reel off, like, crushes like Ryan Reynolds, Mark Salling. I could, like, name a lot of, like, guys I think are really attractive. But I think the ones that I have crushes on that don't always come up, but I get really excited for, is the artists Tegan and Sarah.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, overly obsessed, but whenever, like, I see them on TV, whenever a song comes on, like, especially a lot of their older stuff, I get really, really excited. And in a different way that I get excited when I hear, like, Group Love, which is my second favorite band of all time, or, like, Queen, or Linkin Park, or John Stillsinger's. Like, I just get really excited, and I just get really into, like, their music, the meanings behind their lyrics, and... I don't know. I don't even really know what it is. It's just something about Tegan and Sarah. Whenever I see them, I just get really pumped up and really, really, like, happy. I don't know what it is.
Okay. How about you, Karen? Have you got any sort of strange crushes that are maybe not a typical celebrity?
Well, I don't know if it's not necessarily a typical celebrity, but it is kind of strange in the fact that a lot of the actors that I tend to have a crush on are quite a bit older, and, like, I find Robert Downey Jr. so attractive, and I just think he's amazing, especially in the Iron Man movies. But my big one,
Karen, that's not a weird crush.
Well, no, I know, but my other one is Sean Connery, but not when he was young. I actually don't think he was attractive when he was young, but when he actually has, like, white hair and a beard. It's Sean Connery.
Oh, you guys.
I don't know. But I also have to mention, I have a girl crush too, because I think Natalie Portman is one of the most beautiful women on the face of this planet. And I feel like she doesn't get a lot of attention. And I just really enjoy all of the movies that she's in, but she is just stunningly gorgeous.
You feel like she doesn't get a lot of attention.
I don't. Like, even though she's in Thor.
I think she did a few years ago. Like, I think she was maybe more of a poster girl a few years ago, but she definitely was a big thing. Like, maybe she's less of a big thing now and I just haven't caught up.
I think she seems
like Yeah, well, I feel like everybody that I talk to about her, like, they don't know who she is. And I first saw her in V for Vendetta. Yeah, I was like, how do you not know who she is?
No, that's weird. You know weird people. Like, no, because that's insane. Like, she's really famous. I want to meet these people, you know, who don't know who Natalie Portman is. I want to live in this world. They clearly have much better things to think about than celebrities, because she's famous. Like, but yeah, no, she's, I mean, I don't know what I would have, I think I probably first knew her in, I've seen a lot of her early movies, like Where the Heart Is, and, like, she was in the episode one Star Wars. Like, she was Princess Amidala, and that when she was quite young, and... I don't know. That's strange to me that I guess, again, because I've always known who she is. Maybe time has passed and the new generation of people don't know Natalie Portman. That's because you said that, and I'm like, that's not obscure at all. Like, you guys are making me feel weird having crushes on, like, some celebrity's husband and a journalist. Both of the people that you're talking about are, like, actual celebrities. They're just not the most normal crush-worthy or whatever. But yeah, no, Natalie Portman was. I remember her sort of being cast in the Star Wars prequel, not that I even like Star Wars, but yeah, she's certainly famous. I've seen so many of her movies, so I don't know, maybe the new generation of fandom people only know her from Thor, and because Jane isn't, like, the most glamorous, sexy lady, she doesn't get that much attention. I don't know.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, the people that I know that don't really know who she is are either my age or older. Like, they're not – and granted, they're not really, like, fandom people. They're just regular sort of, like, casual viewers of things. But they just, like, yeah, they had no idea. I was like, she's from V from Vendetta. She's Evie. Like, how do you not know who she is? But
she's won an Academy Award. She's won an Oscar for Black Swan. So, and she was nominated for Closer, and she won like a Golden Globe for Black Swan as well. So I find that, like, I think that with like fandom stuff, she's not been in that much except Thor, if you know what I mean. But I thought she was such a well-known general actress for like, you know, all of the random sort of arty movies that she's been in, like Closer and Garden State and V for Vendetta. Yeah. Even. Well, like, I don't know. That's strange to me.
Maybe it's just the people I know then.
I don't know. But yeah, she is. Also, she can rap. She's well known on the internet for rap. She's a really good rapper. She did it on SNL, and she's legitimately a really good rapper.
Okay, I need to find this. You know how I feel about rapping.
Yeah, so she's really cool. So she's a good person to like. But I find it incredible that there's people that don't know about Natalie Portman. That's like, she isn't an underground person as far as I know. Like, as I said, maybe it's because I knew her and then time passed and then people caught up with things in a different way, but oh well.
Yeah. I always thought she was a big deal, but then people kept telling me they didn't know who she was, so I've kind of had to like change that outlook. But I'm glad I'm not the crazy one.
No, you're not. You're not the crazy one. So none of you have like weird crushes on like video bloggers or like, you know, any celebrities' wives or anything. I'm just the weird. Oh, my other big one is, I consider it a celebrity, and I am in a fandom that considers it a celebrity, but I feel like to the general world, it's not that normal. Nick Grimshaw, who's the host of the Radio 1 breakfast show in the UK, he's a celebrity in the UK. It's not weird, but like to the general population of America who's listening to this show, they would probably think that that was not the most normal celebrity pinup person, but he definitely is in terms of the UK media, so it's not that weird, I guess.
I just don't know a lot of like the smaller, more specific people, I guess, like the indie people and that sort of thing. I tend to stay pretty.
That's the thing. It's not it's not about being indie. It's about you being a weirdo, which everyone kind of is. In terms of like, oh, I have a crush on that guy from that commercial or something. Like, oh, I'm obsessed with, like, when I was like 13, I had a really big crush on the guy from the Bomfunk MC's Freestyler video, which is going to be too old for either of you to remember. But
no, I know.
I mean, like, really weird stuff. So I feel really weird now because you guys just have normal sort of lesser-known celebrities. And I have, like,
I always thought the Old Spice guy was super attractive.
I did not understand the Old Spice phenomenon for, like, so long. And then I saw some of the ads and now I understand why it's funny. So,
yeah.
I cannot say Old Spice is, like, a perfume that we really use over here or whatever. Like, that it's not one that... I think it's a big American brand that is not really something that's, like, a household name here. So, yeah. I guess on that note, we should close up, seeing as I'm the only freak with crushes on famous people's husbands and stuff. I also love Justin Makeda, who is the husband of Jesse Tyler Ferguson. I follow him on Twitter and he's so funny and he's so cute and I adore him. So I'm the weirdo that apparently likes all of these people that are not celebrities, and oh well, what can you do? But we'll leave you off here for this week, I guess, and say thank you to Jack, who has to go off to uni now. And yeah, we will see you next week for season 3, episode 23, Insatiable. Donya, our teammate Donya, will be joining us for our final celebrity guest host of the season before the finale, which will be our listener guest host episode. If you guys want to enter the competition for that, the contest will close this Friday for entries, and then we'll be doing public voting on who you guys should think will be the best person to have on. Anonymous voting, basically. We'll take some quotes from your applications and we'll put them up just numbered 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, however many applicants we decide on, and then the public shall decide through merit alone who should be the guest on the show. So, Karen, are you looking forward to that?
I really am. I mean, we've had tons of luck before with just pulling listeners who wanted to be on the show and seeing how they would do, and they've all been fantastic. So I think now that we have a larger pool to grab from, it's going to be even better, and I'm really excited to see what people write about.
We've got quite a few entries so far, but yeah, you feel free to get those in, and then we will make our choices in terms of a short list, which you guys can then vote on, and please don't cheat in terms of like secretly telling everyone who you are and getting them to vote for you if that's, you know, a kind of crazy thing you do. That's something we are really trying to avoid, and so in the spirit of merit alone, we will try and select the best person based on the votes. So yeah, get your entries in, and it won't be your last chance. We'll always have listener episodes, so don't feel too rejected if you're not the number one top person, because we are picking out of a lot, and at the end of the day, it's not even our choice. You will have lots of chances in future to join us, you know, at least once a season, and I'm sure that we'll have some special episodes. If you have a specialty subject that is like you are like our guests this season, like, you know, Jen with Japanese history and all of that kind of thing, if you have a specialty subject and you think that you could talk to us or teach us about some aspect of mythology or some aspect of the show in, say, a bite-sized episode in the hiatus, please feel free to get in touch and pitch an episode to us that you might like to come on and teach us about something. I don't have anything particular in mind, but Karen, do you think that would be something that would work?
That would be amazing. I mean, I'm already thinking about what we can do over the hiatus, and I definitely have some ideas and some guests lined up already, but if we could do something like that anytime that we can interact with the people that listen to us, because a lot of times it's just us talking to each other, and then you guys hear that. We don't necessarily always get to talk with you guys, so if that ever happens, I would be totally down for that. I think that sounds amazing.
Yeah, please feel free, if you're an expert on something vaguely relevant to the show, to pitch us a bite size that we can chat to you about, and that would be awesome. So in the meantime, you know, look forward to next week's episode and then the finale episode with our guest listener. And we'll say a big thank you to Jack for coming on. So yeah, thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
And I guess everyone can say bye now and we'll go. So bye-bye, Jack, and bye-bye, Karen.
Bye.
Bye.
You're not just a girl.
Thinking it might have been Gerard, Daddy. You know, or well, me, I don't know. Like, what did you think about that, Karen?
I'm so sorry. What did you ask?